Welcome to the Some Insights podcast.
SOME stands for social media, of course.
I'm Dante Licona, social media strategist and consultant.
And I'm Matthias Lufkens, founder of DigiTips.
In this podcast, we talk to the people who manage social media accounts for organizations and their executives. They all have interesting stories to tell.
The idea is to learn how they're managing accounts, how executives engage on each platform, and hear their tips and tricks. We want to learn from the best cases of social media usage.
Today we have with us Stephen Hardy. Welcome to the show, Stephen.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me. Really, really pleased to be here and see you both.
Stephen is the social media lead at NATO, based at the NATO headquarters in Brussels. Stephen worked previously for the UK Foreign Office in London, and NATO recently celebrated its 75th birthday and has a combined army of followers of 6.3 million on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Threads, X, and YouTube.
Stephen, what's the objective of NATO's social media engagement?
So NATO is an organization, works for peace, security, and freedom for 1 billion people. But most of those people will never physically come into contact with NATO. So for them, digital NATO is NATO. NATO's flagship social media channels, the channels that my team are responsible for, that is anything that is at NATO on social media, are one part of a broader NATO social media landscape. We work in conjunction with leadership, with allies, with NATO military accounts and other civilian accounts. And most importantly, those channels provide a consistency to NATO social media communications with an audience built up over 15 years. In terms of kind of more specifics in regards to the objectives of those social media accounts, they explain and inform audiences about NATO's work. They amplify and supplement NATO news, working in conjunction with the NATO Secretary General, the NATO spokesperson, and other NATO accounts. They foster dialogue with the NATO. We work very closely with our engagement colleagues, particularly around events, to foster dialogue with and within the alliance, such as through live streaming and promotion of event platforms and conversation on social media. We directly engage with the NATO's community. We'd like to do more of that. That requires a lot of capacity and resource, but we try to engage and not just broadcast. And we defend our values and we stand up for our values at the same time.
NATO is a defensive alliance. So how do you project deterrence and strength without coming across as aggressive?
NATO is a defensive alliance. Yes, there's an element of projecting strength and readiness in what we do. But NATO as an organization does not seek confrontation. It poses no threat. And our social media mirrors this. Actually, our main audiences, or often our main audiences, are allies and allied populations and the partners that we work with. And so though deterrence and defense is a core task of NATO, lots of our social media and our communications is actually assurance focused. So that is explaining to allied populations and the populations of member states how NATO allies and forces work together, combine their skills and capabilities to keep them safe in what is an increasingly dangerous and competitive world. If I could give kind of some practical examples of what we've done over the last few years in my time in terms of NATO social media. So we've made some very kind of subtle but impactful changes to some of the content that we post, particularly when we're thinking of kind of a military domain or as a military focus to our comms. So for example, we have changed the type of music we put in videos. It's now a lot more mainstream. It used to be quite predominantly either heavy rock. No offense to rock fans, I enjoy it myself, but it can project a certain tone, or there was like a battle rhythm music. Now we do far more mainstream across a whole range of kind of music genres. But just to make our music more accessible, take away the hard edge of it, we try to focus on more human-centered element to our content. So Even if there is an aspect of showing capabilities, we try to show the forces. So whether it's sailors, pilots, soldiers, and led by them in terms of their expertise and skills and what is capabilities ultimately keep people safe. And of course, the words we use matter too, and we're very careful about that.
There's quite a lot of digital footprint of NATO, and how do you coordinate the many social media accounts of battle groups, centers of excellence? How do you coordinate?
So those two specific examples in terms of NATO battle groups in the east of the alliance and the NATO centers of excellence are actually led by allies themselves. So at NATO headquarters, there is, of course, a coordination element to all the work we do is the central social media team. And we work with other colleagues across NATO's public diplomacy division, particularly our press and media department, the NATO spokesperson, to disseminate kind of NATO's approach, NATO's messaging. Matthias, at the very beginning, you mentioned NATO's 75th anniversary. There's also lots of other set piece events over the course of the year, such as NATO summits, ministerials. And there's a big job that my team do in disseminating guidance to allies, to other NATO communicators, often through the use of a social media toolkit, which includes all the main elements that we want to kind of equip allied communicators with. So the main hashtag, main website links, content created by NATO. We try best possible to give away content that could be editable. So it can complement their work. Allies and other NATO accounts already doing a lot of work themselves, communicating their element of NATO, or communicating how they're working with other allies. But it's also a chance for us to equip them with everything from the center and from NATO headquarters in Brussels at the same time.
Can you give us an example of this collaboration with allies and other army accounts? You know, who is leading this?
One of the great things about being at the main social media team at NATO was we work across this political military alliance. Very closely with other staff in the international staff at NATO, very closely with, you mentioned battle groups, but we also have headquarters and regional level headquarters on the military side. 32 allies with, air forces, navies, armies, and lots of other divisions as well, which means there's lots and lots of stories to tell. So colleagues who work in web and multimedia are always out there coordinating with these various stakeholders and various groups to understand what stories they've got to tell, to arrange access, and to create the type of content that we might post on NATO social media channels. But the real luxury we have at working in NATO social media team is that we have those 32 allies with numerous forces, as well as civilian entities as well, and we quite often in a very fortunate position, very grateful for it, that we get to cherry pick some of the very best content allies themselves are creating to showcase their work. I could give you a very specific example to give you an idea what that looks like. Probably a couple of years ago now, I spotted a video from a unit within the Polish army. And this was a soldier doing a speed run on an assault course. It was a single shot video. It followed the soldier from start to finish in 60 seconds. Really, really kind of excellent demonstration of just fitness and strength and capability. It was just fantastic footage to watch. And so we got in touch with them because we would love to post it on NATO social media accounts. They were very kind to send us the file of that video. We did a very, very short edit. I think we just added some music to make it a bit more friendly to Instagram Reels and YouTube Shorts. And we posted that on NATO's YouTube account as well as Instagram and Facebook. And on YouTube alone, that video was watched almost 50 million times. And I believe about 25% of NATO's YouTube subscribers were born of that video itself. So that's a very, very, very good and impactful version. But we get to tell those to find that type of content all the time. Of course, we credit our allies, Well, that's a really, really fortunate position we get to be in, of spotting these great stories, these great visuals, and putting on the NATO account in NATO's voice.
Our listeners want to know how our guests deal with crisis. I'm sure you have faced many. What have you learned about crisis communications? Are there any practical tips you can share with our listeners? And what about some innovative uses of AI for crisis comms?
My lessons over crisis, there have been many over my time in social media, and I think that probably applies to everyone, but particularly when you're working in government or international organizations. Number one, and on the public side and the public facing side, is to lead with empathy. Crisis and usually involves, you know, there is a negative effect on someone somewhere. So to lead with empathy in our communications. Secondly, they nearly always require a sense of urgency. So you will and your team need to go up a gear and do things quickly. And it's very important to be quick, but it's also more important to be accurate. So you have to stay calm at the same time. You can be quick 99 times, but the one time you're wrong, and the fallout that can be more detrimental to being quick. I mean, I guess some of the obvious things: you need to prioritize, have a very clear organizational level of what is the priority goals, and really focus your work towards delivering those, and be realistic about what social media can do. Depending on the issue, crises means you can really experiment and use every digital tool you have to try and achieve those goals. And I'll try and think of some specific examples. So it can mean, you know, you're doing new things. Sometimes they don't work. You've got to learn from that, move on, abandon them, try something else. Sometimes it can just mean doing the basics very well. And sometimes you have to drop your standards. And it's just about getting factual, accurate information that various audiences may be looking for as quick as possible. An example of kind of innovation, I'll go back probably to my time when I was working at the Foreign Office, the UK Foreign Office. There was a time when there was a hurricane disaster in the Caribbean. And I found myself going out to one of the islands that had been impacted by a hurricane. And so it was just myself, a DSLR camera, my laptop, my phone, some mosquito repellent. And off I went to one of the Caribbean islands. I went to Anguilla. So I went to create content for official government accounts to show the response in terms of recovery and aid. And that was created for UK government official accounts. But it was very obvious at the same time that there was other audience as well, that perhaps we weren't the best to have the best channels to reach them. And particularly those on the island itself. So while I was there, I spotted this really good, the student group who were creating videos on Facebook to a really, really good level, not necessarily crisis related. I think they were media students who were creating videos, and they were still creating videos during that crisis. They kind of switched their focus a little bit and telling stories of their community. And so we got in touch and invited them to come do an interview with the governor of the island. So they had video content for their channel, and they again would reach the local community better than we could. So it was a kind of good example of using and working with others who may be able to tell the story. Another element of that work was regular visitors to the island who weren't there at the time, but were very interested in information, you know, to basic information about the island's recovery, were petrol stations opened, where could you get water from, when flights might return, because that was of interest to them. And they all existed in Facebook community groups where they shared in normal times, you know, advice, tips on where to eat and things like that. So they kind of stayed in touch that way. And again, as the government, we shared information, that type of information with them. So we just relayed you know, that information in terms of what utilities were working, when they might expect flights to return. And then they posted that on their own channels into the Facebook groups, reaching the audience that really wanted this information far better than we could. And they knew the information was sourced from the best possible place. And then I kind of step away from social media a little bit. One of the other elements I'd done there was actually help the governor write an op-ed for the first edition of the kind of local island newspaper to be printed after the hurricane has hit. So not digital, not social media, but it's a case of kind of chipping in where you can to help communicate your goals at the same time.
Coming back to the 75th anniversary, which obviously, you know, you had a long time to prepare. Can you tell us some of the highlights of this celebration?
Yeah, I mean, a fantastic moment to be at NATO headquarters on a 75th anniversary. And yes, you're right, lots of work in the lead up to that. We've been communicating steadily on it publicly since January, and a lot of work before then as well. Some standout content for me. Our multimedia team worked with an online artist to create what's known as an infinite zoom animation. I have no idea the tactic of a technique and how to create it, far beyond my basic content creation skills. But essentially, you zoom through this animation and you just permanently zoom from one scene to the next. Really, really clever use of creative, but also kind of an immersive mobile experience. And so they partnered with this artist to create an animation that took people through NATO's core domains, starting from the sea, moving to land, to air, to space, to cyber. I just thought it was a fantastic and innovative piece of content, very social media friendly. And that was our kind of signature content for the summit as well. We also, you know, stretched lots of different muscles to reach audiences, engage audiences with the 75th anniversary. So the team created a long-form documentary, I think about 18-minute documentary on NATO's history. Still very hard to cram in 75 years of history into just 18 minutes itself, so lots didn't make the cut. So we've done long-form. There was a podcast released, and that will be more episodes will be released over the course of the year. But they also done really small-scale, kind of quick, cost-free or low-cost content as well. Some of our most impactful content was just emoji-only tweets based on how many allies we found in NATO versus how many allies we have today. And then really one of my personal favorites was we kind of tapped into Valentine's Day and we kind of spun off, you know, the idea of kind of commitment to do a piece on the transatlantic bond for Valentine's Day with an Instagram reel. And I just quite like that we were able to do something like that, something creative around an everyday occurrence that lots of people celebrate, lots of people mark.
Thank you, Stephen. And shout out to Vaskange, the artist of the Infinite Zoom. He's just an incredible account to follow on TikTok and Instagram. In your craft, what does success look like?
In my position today, greater understanding of NATO and therefore ideally support for the organization, so broadly in the position today. As a social media operator, a kind of one thread through everything what success looks like is content that resonates with the audience. So you've either made them smile, you've made them laugh, you've made them feel something enough to the point where they've reacted, they've commented, they've replied, they've shared, and they've expressed, you know, an appreciation for either the activity of the organization or the government you work for, or for your choice of content and how you've approached it. And they've recognized, you know, you've added value to their feed that day, in your approach. And I think that's ultimately, when you know that you've really engaged an audience, you've really, as I say, you've added value to their feed today. One thing we always try to aim for, and I've always done this in my social in my work in social media, is you can't do with every content because sometimes you do just have to get messaging out. But is to look for content that either entertains, it inspires, it informs, or it shows values. And I think that's what your audiences and communities, if they recognize that, that's as I said, added some value to their online experience that day. as opposed to simply broadcasting messaging at people.
And finally, we're coming to a battery of questions which we ask all our guests. First, who is your favorite and most inspiring social media mentor?
He's probably going to be extremely embarrassed if he ever hears this and hear that I've name dropped him. But I used to work with a colleague called Jack Pearson when I was at the UK Foreign Ministry. And Jack was just never short of an idea. He had so many ideas. He also was very subtle, but very good at building up the confidence of those around him. And the other thing I would add is Jack just constantly made the case for investing in social media across the board, and he'd done it very, very well. So as I say, he's probably embarrassed that I've mentioned his name if he hears that. But he did an excellent job, and I really, really, really enjoyed working with Jack.
Shout out to Jack, friend of the pod. Which are your three favorite accounts to follow?
So I think the Ukrainian government and whole of society themselves have done an exceptional job on social media in very, very challenging times and garnering support for Ukraine's cause, but also showing the humanity and personality and bravery of Ukrainian forces and the people. So very hard to single out a single account, but I will, as you asked for three, I will say the Ministry of Defense account of Ukraine at DefenseU. I think they do an exceptional job in these times. I will not be able to do the pronunciation of the second one, but as Sweden was very close to joining, and as they have since became a member, we found a Swedish airbase account in the north of Sweden, and they just post the most beautiful pictures and video. And again, I've mentioned it before, but we've been very fortunate to share some of their content. The great one we did in a week at Sweden joinings, they had this shot of the airbase in the snow, and they had their airfield behind them, and a reindeer kind of crosses the camera in front of them. It's just beautiful, beautiful photography. But apologies, I will not be able to pronounce it. Swedish is not good enough. And then the same as anybody else, you know, a large part of my time online is to be entertained and to find information on the things that I like and enjoy the most in my own life. So a shout out to my hometown football club, Sunderland AFC, at the same time. I follow them because I'm interested in them. So no matter what they post, I'm listening and I'm watching.
What are your favorite social media channels for professional and for personal use?
Instagram on a personal. And I think that's probably somewhat age related. It just seems to be the platform that my friends and those I speak to the most in my own life have stuck with. That seems to be the one channel. Again, on a kind of personal basis, it's the one I can stay in touch with my friends, my family, and others. And then I think in addition, Instagram Reels have really kind of found their own space. Kind of established himself as a medium. So if I just want to go on social media for a few minutes and let the algorithms dictate something that might make me switch off, make me unwind, make me laugh, then Instagram Reels are doing quite a good job of just distracting me for a moment as well at the same time. Away from Instagram, I still do use X, but not as much as I have in the past. I spend my time going back to more of my curated Twitter lists because I want to go and find out what the conversation is on a particular topic. So whether that's, you know, in social media and marketing, from the likes of both of yourselves and a whole host of other people in similar positions or working similar roles to myself, or those working in brands, and I just want to see what people are speaking about in terms of social media and content and creative. I check my lists on there, or I do more news related. So I'm a little bit more down to kind of curated lists than general browsing on X. Well, those are probably the two I still spend my most time on.
Do you have a podcast you are listening to?
I'm an avid, heavy podcast listener. So this will be really, really hard to pick one. I really like Pod Save the World, the US podcast. And I also really like Pivot, again, which is another US podcast for foreign policy conversation and discussion, or for kind of tech, media, discussion. Those are the two I found myself when I have to force myself for a run. Those two podcasts have done the best job of distracting me from the fact that I'm running. So I really like those, and they kind of cross over kind of personal professional interests. So I really like those. And then a kind of couple of other ones. There's a new podcast called My Perfect Console, which is an interview series related to gaming. And it's kind of make your favorite games console based on kind of five games that you've played over your past and various aspects in your life. I'm not a huge gamer anymore. I don't really have time to do it, but it's quite nice to listen to a podcast and go back to some of those. And then a final one of my side, I really like Search Engine at the moment, which is deep dives into just completely random topics, but somewhat based loosely around kind of pop culture and the internet as well. So I'm finding that one quite interesting. And finally, the last one, of course, So Meat Insights. I've really enjoyed the interviews you've had so far, and quite daunting to follow some of the speakers you've had.
Thanks for the plug. Do you ever disconnect, and how do you avoid social media burnout?
I think my grey hair is probably testament to the fact that I'm very bad at both of those things. But it is important. I've got better at it over the years. I think we all struggle. Anyone in social media struggles with that. And I think those in small teams even more so. So I think it's a constant challenge. As I say, I've got better at it. I mean, the really obvious things, taking a long vacation, 2 weeks or more, I find is really what you need to fully switch off. Something I never really particularly done in the UK, but I've got better at it. I'm over in Brussels. So taking a long vacation when you can. And then some small tactics. If I'm off for longer than a week or so, I don't tell them, but I'll unfollow the institutional accounts so they don't appear in my personal feed. And then I'll delete some platforms entirely from my personal phone. So I'll probably delete things like X, just so I haven't got the temptation to log in and switch back into work mode. It's the only way I can do that. Every day, week to week, weekends, yeah, it's very, very difficult. You kind of feel like an always on culture.
Nice tips over there for the social media managers out there. And finally, in one sentence, what is your social media mantra?
Be the enemy of boring content. It's easier said than done in practice, but I do think it can be equally as important for a social media team to push back on the bad ideas that will turn away your audiences, as it is to come up with creative, good ideas that will engage your community. That can sometimes make you feel like the bad guys. But you know, it comes from a place of wanting to do the best you can to create the most impactful social media accounts and trusting in the team hired to do that.
That was great advice, Stephen. Thank you for your time and your honest answers. This was the latest episode of our So Me podcast with me, Matthias Lufkens.
And me, Dante Licona. Please subscribe and follow us on our accounts. Goodbye, and until next time. Let's just leave it, cause I'm not for so mean sights. Hear the pros view, Dante and the fears bringing insights new. Talking strategies, the winds and the walls. Deep conversations where the real talk flows. From pros and XX stories come about, revealing the behind the scenes light. Some Insights Podcast.